From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells. Our guest, Professor Craig Wright, who has written The Hidden Habits of Genius Beyond Talent, IQ, and Grit, Unlocking the Secrets of Greatness. Einstein, Beethoven, Picasso, Jobs, geniuses whose cultural contributions have irreversibly shaped society, yet Beethoven could not multiply, Picasso couldn't pass a fourth-grade math test, and Jobs left high school with a 2.65 GPA. Now, what does that say about our metrics for measuring success and achievement today? And what exactly is genius? Craig Wright, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you, John, very much for inviting me.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you on the program. We also very much enjoyed your book. Maybe you can start off by giving us a modern-day definition of what genius is.
In simple terms, I think it's just the capacity to change the world, to have an original idea that goes out there, and it could be physics, it could be, and what did we learn recently about Einstein and black holes, that was even more proof coming forward out of his general theory of relativity. It could be Einstein and the general theory of relativity, it'd be a new painting, it could be a new symphony, whatever, but it's something that has significant impact on the world, that changes the lives of other people. And I could even put it in a, you know, because this is a science-oriented show, like an equation here. G equals S times N times D. Genius equals significance times the number of people impacted times the duration of that impact. So, and that gives us a lot of flexibility, but at least that kind of gets it all into a nutshell or a simple equation.
And going back in history, when did the notion of genius begin?
Wow. Well, that goes back in the day. First, really, in recorded history with the ancient Greeks, and they had a completely different notion about it. It was more like Walt Disney's Aladdin with a genie sitting on your shoulder there. And every year when we have our birthday and we have birthday cake and a candle up there, what we're really doing is making a votive offering to our genie, that genie will do really great and wonderful things for us in the course of the coming year. So it goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks. And then it changes rather significantly during the Enlightenment, as people begin to turn away from God, external forces, and look within the individual. The individual has the capacity to change the world. Genius is imminent, and the whole issue of copyright law, intellectual property comes in at that time, changes again during the Romantic era in the 19th century when we get the idea of the half-crazed genius, the deranged genius, Victor Hugo, Quasimodo, or Phantom of the Opera type of genius. So it continues to change, which tells us something, I suppose, that genius really is just a human construct. There's, nothing absolute about it here. It's a human construct, and it will change as people want it to change with culture and with time.
I was pleased to see, Craig, in your book, one of my favorite quotes. It comes from a 1996 Wired interview with Steve Jobs. And I'm just going to give the quote quickly and we can talk about it. Creativity is just connecting things. When you ask creative people how they did something, they feel a little guilty because they didn't really do it. They just saw something. It seemed obvious to them for a while. And that's why, and that's because they were able to connect experiences they've had and synthesize new things. That is a fascinating quotation, and I know that there's a lot of different ways to look at creativity, but certainly Jobs is someone that we can hold up and take a look at because he's been such an extraordinary figure in technology.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you should mention that, John, because when I lecture on this topic, I actually have a big slide up there and have a picture of him on the screen with exactly that quote. So this quote means a lot to me, too. What's really surprising about that is, generally speaking, these geniuses, they're out there, they're so busy being geniuses that they're not thinking about what they're doing. They're not thinking about the process of being a genius. I remember having my genius class there at Yale. I would have writers come in and and innovators and tried to ask them, tell me how it is that you come up with these ideas. And it was, in a word, more or less pointless, total waste of time. They hadn't really thought about it. Or in the case of one important writer, she didn't want to think about it because she was afraid it would destroy the creative process. So it's interesting that Jobs has a capacity to self-analyze here just a little bit. Having said all of that, whereas I think where your question is really going and where it should go is, why are they, how do these, you know, connecting things? Well, to connect things, you've got to have things to connect. And what I've learned over time is that these geniuses, if you were to ask me what's the most important component of genius, it's not IQ, it is curiosity. These people are hugely curious. They'll get their hands on everything. They'll get into messes. They are voracious readers, whether it's Elon Musk from youth or Oprah Winfrey, a passionate reader. So they read stuff. They're out there doing stuff. They're hugely curious. They get a lot of stuff in their heads. And eventually, if you get a lot of stuff in your heads, and suddenly you do something else, which is sort of relaxed, and the reasons that your insights come at particular times, then voila, you can have an insight. You are combining instantaneous, you are combining things. And Einstein in his autobiography talks about that. Actually, now that I think of it, Einstein's another guy that actually talks about, and I could go over to my bookshelf here and pull it out, his autobiography, and where he talks about that. And he says it shows up to him as not as text, not as written ideas, but as visual images. And eventually the images begin to coalesce. Well, we could say come together, combine, they coalesce. And then at that point, he can either put words with these ideas, and maybe this is where he gets his thought, thought experiments from. He puts words with these ideas, or he can choose not to put words with the ideas. The words are just a way of communicating the ideas to the outside world. But the ideas are the images that are coalescing.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Craig Wright. He has written The Hidden Habits of Genius, Beyond Talent, IQ, and Grit, Unlocking the Secrets of Greatness. And of the 14 hidden habits of genius, one that you just spoke about, curiosity, is certainly one of them. And I really appreciate the adjectives that you use to really hit the point home. It's insatiable curiosity. It's relentless curiosity. I mean, when you think about Einstein, the example you just brought up, and as an 8-year-old boy, he pondered for hours and hours through his imagination what a photon of light would look like, trying to approach a train that was running away from that photon of light at 40 miles an hour. I mean, this is what I would call relentless curiosity.
Yeah, and I think he said, and maybe I hope I quoted it in my book, at one point he said, I have no special talent. You know, you think I'm a genius. And all he says, no, I have only one thing. I am relentlessly curious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let me ask you this. How does education in art and music relate to higher scores in math and verbal skills?
I think it has to do with the capacity to recognize patterns. I don't know about the connection between math and art, and I would want some evidence to suggest that there is. I know that they're both personally watching, being graduated from the School of Music, going to Harvard, and watch really talented people there that are gifted both in music and in mathematics. And then reading through the biographies of not only Einstein, who said, if I hadn't become a physicist, I would have become a violinist. And his favorite composer was Mozart. I think it's Max Planck. One of them was also, and I should have this committed to memory here, but there are two other major physicists in Einstein's orbit there who are also not just interested in music, but actually out there writing music. I think what it is, I mean, if you look at what music is, music used to be back in the Greeks, a science,
yes.
Right? It was not an art. It wasn't really until we get to Leonardo in the 15th century in the Renaissance. It was part of the quadrivium. And there was geometry, mathematics, astronomy, and music. And that's for a very good reason. They understood what music was. It was just frequencies. It was
It's fascinating how you've taken these extraordinary people and you've given us many examples of how through art and music that led to these additional skills. And then you have this piece, and I just loved it, and that's about Mozart, who sort of took the flip side of it. He was someone that started studying math at the age of 4, and before music, and somehow he came to it from 180 degrees from a completely different angle. He started with math, and you have this one thing in your book. I just want to ask you about it. There's a sheet of music that he wrote by hand in 1782. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of this piece, he breaks off and starts doing this very sophisticated retrograding patterns of numbers and mathematics.
Right. Yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, he was into number theory, and he had studied mathematics intensely. When I started this project, I actually started with Mozart, and then I got interested. You know, this guy's a serious mathematician. We don't have time to go through it all here. And I was going to write a book on Mozart in genius. But then I got interested in Leonardo. And, you know, actually Einstein said, my curiosity is getting in the way of my work. Mm-hmm. So off it ran. But I did sit down and write a lengthy chapter called Mozart and Mathematics. Yes. But I never published it. I have now, however. Just this past week, I started a website. And folks can go on that website. And if they would like to read about music, Mozart and mathematics, all of those words are there. It's quite dense. My editors in New York, they wouldn't go anywhere near that because this is not for the generalist reader. This is for a more scientific mind. But you could go to Craig Wright Genius Music, craigwrightgeniusmusic.net, craigwrightgeniusmusic.net, and go into essays, and you will find that long chapter that I was never able to work in my book, and probably rightly so. It's for only a select few.
Yeah. So in teaching your now famous class at Yale on genius and putting this book together, what most surprised you about genius?
That it wasn't IQ. It wasn't so-called smarts, that it wasn't a high IQ score, that these people, all the things that I had taught my children to do and thought I would be teaching my grandchildren to do were essentially not correct. That it's not this high IQ. It's things like curiosity and passion. It's cross-border thinking. It's diverse thinking. How were your grades this term, Johnny? Well, they weren't very good. Well, I should be asking, how disparate were the courses that you were taking?
Exactly.
And how hard were they? Because once again, that takes us back to Steve Jobs that you referenced, John, because that's how you get the stuff in there that you're going to be able to combine. If you're just banging down the same thing, you're not combining anything. No insights are going to come that way, I don't think.
Yeah. Craig, popular culture has taught us that geniuses have these aha moments. And of course, a movie's kind of short. You can't put 10 years into it. And you go through this in your book about how long it takes some of these people to have this aha moment because they've been working on these things for many years. Can you talk about that?
How long did it take? How old was Charles Darwin before he finally published Origins of Species? And he sat out there for 5 years on the good ship Beagle going around the world, which is really funny because he was fatally susceptible to seasickness. Actually, he was only at sea about a third of that time. The rest of the time, he's rooting around on land looking for species. That's a five-year process. And even thereafter, he had to kind of verify and think back through this and think of oppositional theories and so on and wait for Malthus to come out with his population studies. It's a long period of percolation. And one could say the same thing about Einstein and relativity. I mean, he came up with special relativity there in 1905, and then he starts to, the science is taking him in slightly different ways, and I don't think he finishes general relativity until 1915. So that could be as long as a 10-year incubation period. So psychologists have set this out. You've got to get information in there, and then you need to let it incubate. You need to let it percolate, and if you get yourself in the right mindset, that some days these combinative ideas will strike you and then the game's afoot.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the insights that you and your students have come to in studying these extraordinary people is that many of these great minds turn out to be not so great human beings.
Actually, most of them. And you can read the biography of Einstein, where he is not such a great person. I mean, really. And you could read, but one of the few that is actually Darwin. He seems like a decent person. But here's the reason, I think. I think it's because they are so passionate in what they're doing, so obsessive about what they're doing, they're oblivious to those around them. So they treat those, you know, they're racing down the road toward greatness or genius, and the rest of those in immediate proximity just become roadkill, and they could care less. There are certain analogies in the political sphere today that we needn't go into, but these transformative people have the tendency to not be very nice people, as Marcia Gellhorn said about Ernest Hemingway. Well, he sure must have been a very great genius because he was a wretched human being. that sort of says it all.
Yeah. And you quote Aldous Huxley, and I'll just mention the quote real quick. The secret of genius is to carry the spirit of the child into old age. How does that relate to our friend Walt Disney?
Well, I mean, he was the personification of just that kind of mentality. You know, he'd erect these small miniature trains and railroads in his backyard, and he'd be out there, invite the neighborhood kids over there. And there's so much that it's the whole idea about when are you most imaginative? When are you most creative? And it's in your very earliest years. And as time goes on, we as parents, we clamp down. We just try, you know, you're a parent, you're just trying to deal with chaos and bring law and order so it doesn't spiral out of complete control. But that's not a good thing to do, because we're setting up all these barriers to creativity. But now I have these grandchildren, and it's so great. I can sit there and watch. And when that child goes to reach across the table for that knife or reach towards that electrical socket, and my daughter is sitting there consternated, I'm inclined to let that kid go, because the last thing you ever want to say to a child, it turns out, is, oh, behave and grow up. Because if you grow up, you may lose that childlike sense of imagination.
That's right. That's right. You know, many of the items that you mentioned in the 14 Habits of Genius, work ethic and resilience, originality, they're things that we all certainly understand, but one that's certainly a common trait is obsession. And what does that have to do with the genius and being able to make these extraordinary advancements?
Obsession, obsession is what causes it all. It allows us. They're relentless. They never give up, and eventually they get there if they have all these other factors and if they're a bit fortunate. But a passion is having a passion is the most important, arguably the most important component, if not to genius, in most important in staying alive. Because one of the things that I found out, and it just occurred to me one day, well, why not? You know, I think I'd read this remark by Groucho Marx, who said all geniuses die young. And not all right. I worked with Mozart, and then Kurt Cobain died young. Sylvia Plath, Virginia Woolf, you know, and Van Gogh. So I never thought about it. Is that really true? But then there's Michelangelo, to be 88, and how old was Picasso? 92. Stravinsky was in his 90s. So I started to add all of this up, do the simple math on it. It turns out they lived 10 to 15 years longer than the general populace. They used to be, and some of these, you know. Back in the day, 15th century, people didn't live very long. So if Michelangelo is living to 88, that's pretty extraordinary. You know, Leonardo lived into his mid-60s. So why? Why do they live so long? Because they are optimists. They think they can really change the world. And optimists, the recent Harvard BU study on this, optimists live 11 to 15% longer than the average person. They have something like a 90% greater chance of reaching the age of 85. My favorite quote on this, I don't know if I'll be able to pull it off or not, the sculptor Henry Moore, who lived to be 88, said, the most important thing in life is having a task. It's having a task that you bring everything to every day of your life. But the most important thing is, it's a task that you cannot possibly do.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because if you actually do it, then the game's over.
Yeah. I'm also fascinated by collaborations of people over time, and being a music nut, certainly McCartney and Lennon comes to mind. And it's just fascinating to me that they never had a writing session where they didn't come away with a song. And they were just very, very productive. And not only did they have that collaboration, but the influence, for an example, when Brian Wilson came out with his album Smile, that was really the thing that nudged those guys in the direction of Sgt. Pepper's, and which is, you know, arguably the great.
Mm-hmm. No, we both listened to that when it came out. You can probably remember the color art on the cover, right?
They were produced by a woman here in Salt Lake City.
Oh, an artist. Interesting. You know, I did not, to be perfectly honest here, I did not go into the issue of collaboration very much. And maybe that is a shortcoming to which I plead fully guilty. I didn't really follow that as I should have. So I'm not in a position to offer a strong opinion one way or the other about it. I've had some great in terms of pleasure and creativity, I will say that in my own life, the most enjoyable things that I've ever done is working with a group of young people this had to do with online education, in which I was at one point appointed academic director of online education there. Yeah. And it was fascinating. They said, whatever money you want, you can have. Whatever people you want, you can have. And we pulled together this great imaginative team, and we were writing jingles and doing cartoons and all this stuff. And it just fed on itself. And it was exhilarating. So, and maybe some good came out of it. Online education came out of it. So I never really studied that component of sort of the team effort, and I should look into that more.
Well, your book is very comprehensive, and it's, you know, covers a lot. And, you know, again, I very much enjoyed it. We want to thank you for being with us on Cool Science Radio this morning. Craig Wright is Professor Emeritus of Music at Yale University. He taught for many years a famous course on genius, and he has just written, and it has just come out, The Hidden Habits of Genius, Beyond Talent, IQ, and Grit, Unlocking the Secrets of Greatness. Craig, we want to thank you so much.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it. A lot of fun.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.